time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Hey, Hugh, give me a call. 115 grand. I could have written this. I'll only charge you 114 grand and no travel. I don't even need the travel.
With SI's Pat Forty.
Enlightenment. Like Siddhartha going to Nirvana. I mean,
what's the Dalai Lama involved in this?
Here's Pat and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Throwback edition, Pat.
Here we go.
Art Briles.
That's enough to make me nostalgic.
A little kerfuffle here.
Been Hugh a while Jackson. Since we've talked about Art.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Hugh Jackson is coaching at Grambling now. And he hired Art Briles to be his offensive coordinator, I believe, right? He's on the staff.
Yeah, on the staff.
I don't know what else you'd have him do. Former Baylor coach who lost his job due to, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. Sexual assault scandal involving numerous players at Baylor, all this stuff. Much tumult. No, a sad, serious case. And Briles was the coach and he lost his job. Though he's paid out. I'll get into my views on it later. It's more complicated of a case and who to blame than just Art Briles is bad.
Right.
That doesn't mean Art Briles is good. It's just no. A very more gray case than what people want to make it out to be. However, at this point, it is what it is. And the moment Hugh Jackson hires Art Briles at Grambling, which, you know, in a general sense, if we go back, you say, well, the former very successful Baylor head coach is now the offense coordinator at a HBCU and 1AA or FCS would be a tremendous hire. You know, all hell breaks loose. Everyone gets fired up. Hugh Jackson is not backing down.
No.
Though on this hire, which most everybody else has done, which at least is smart. I mean, the worst is like you hire Art Briles and then everyone screams at you and you go, oh, that's it. We're not hiring him anymore. Like you didn't see this coming. Like this was going to happen. So the Hugh Jackson Foundation released a statement, which is kind of weird.
Grambling didn't want it on their letterhead.
I guess not. The Hugh Jackson Foundation, which is based out of Blue Ash, Ohio. And let me say this about the Hugh Jackson Foundation. According to Dan Murphy, excellent reporter at ESPN, easily to find tax forms. And the Hugh Jackson Foundation collected $158,000 in donations in 2019, paid $115,000 to its employee, and then another $15,000 on travel. So it gave out $4,000 in grants.
$4,000.
Nice job, Hugh Jackson Foundation.
There you go.
Yeah. Be careful who you donate to.
No kidding.
I used to look.
Not
these
changing
up on
a lot of lives there at the Hugh Jackson Foundation.
A lot of the athletes, a lot of coaches. Their foundations are garbage. It's a way to employ my daughter-in-law, or my son-in-law, you know,
right.
It's graft. I mean, that's absolutely, that's pathetic.
Yeah,
I mean, really. I'm 158,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
You got all these donations and you give out $4,000 and you just keep the other part. You can always go online when you're donating to these things to the 501 and look up an organization's 501c3 and see what they spend the money on.
Yep.
Don't give to the Hugh Jackson Foundation.
No.
But that ain't even the point.
No.
That should be humiliating enough. Hugh Jackson's got a lot of money. He should throw $154,000 to somebody for that. The Hugh Jackson Foundation, though, released the statement. The recent hiring of Art Briles, a member of the Grambling State University football staff, caused confusion and concerns that we would like to address. The Jackson Foundation has been dedicated to fighting all forms of sexual abuse and exploitation, as well as other forms of racial and social bias, just not with the most of the money we get. That part wasn't in there. We have a clear understanding of the role that coaches and others who have a position of trust play in the lives of those they meet. We also know and understand the process of identifying risks, helping others to heal, and the importance of prevention. We believe that through the hiring of Coach Briles and the well-developed programs we have in place, this hire will be instrumental in teaching others the importance of knowing how to prevent victimization, proper reporting procedures, provide adequate resources to individuals who have been victimized, and develop strong law enforcement partnerships within the community. All this by hiring Art Briles.
Interesting. Some people might argue that you're doing the opposite by hiring Art Briles. But
I mean, this statement is fascinating. This recent hire of Coach Briles is a testament to the importance of these key factors. Forgiveness, We believe that all are deserving of forgiveness, and without it, healing can't begin. Okay. Here's the thing. It's not my job to forgive. I wasn't aggrieved. Job to forgive Art Briles.
No, it's not.
I'm confused. I was not. I don't even want to. I mean, we shouldn't even be laughing at this thing because it's so serious. But it's like, why does he think that it's Grambling or my job reading this to forgive Art Briles?
Because Hugh Jackson told us so. Because he would like Art Briles to drop some ball plays.
The Hugh Kimberly Dinert, the executive director of the Hugh Jackson Foundation, and Hugh Jackson himself, they're telling us, not Grambling. Okay, forgiveness. Little weak on that point. This is one of the great. I'm going to read this whole thing. Redemption. Redemption follows forgiveness.
There we go. Okay.
Look at this. This is like narrative. Going from surviving experience into thriving through new experiences requires a restoration of faith and an opportunity for improvement.
Okay. A lot of
again,
nice.
Again, is Art Briles the victim here?
That's what we're starting. We seem to be heading that direction with this. We got a lot of nice self-help buzzwords in there.
I don't believe you have to restore your faith to have redemption.
No.
I don't. I discount that statement. Strike that statement from the record. I have issues with that statement too. Finally, enlightenment sounds good.
There we go.
Is it our own experience to give us the wisdom to teach others how to live in a world of respect and honor? So, I mean, look, conceivably you could say, look, Art Briles made mistakes, which I absolutely do believe. I also do not believe Art Briles is the worst human being to ever walk the earth.
No.
But you could sit there and say, hey, look, there's nothing better than a reformed guy on this to know these are the mistakes I made. These are the blind spots. These are where you get over your skis. This is what you didn't do. And this guy can be very helpful. That's a decent argument. Also, like, I'm in charge, not Art Briles.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, there's that. I mean, I don't think the students at Grambling are at risk of Art Briles as their offensive coordinator. Like, I'm not going to go that far to be like, and I do believe like guys have to work somewhere. Is it better if Art Briles isn't a football coach and is like managing the quick change oil place down the corner? Like, I don't know. I mean, like, so as we move forward together with Coach Briles, we ask that people keep in mind that no matter your views on this topic, please remember that people can and often do become re-traumatized and re-victimized by statements which may or may not be accurate. Yikes. We will continue to support Coach Briles and all victims of assault, violence, social and racial injustice. We will continue to provide equal opportunity for healing for everyone. Man, I was less offended by this hire before this statement. I don't think this statement did what it was intended.
Sometimes people explain too much or talk too much.
The hell is this thing?
That last part there.
No wonder Grambling didn't want this thing on his letter.
Yeah, exactly. The last part there. Please don't bring up Art's past because it might traumatize everybody. Wait a minute. If you're that worried about it, why'd you hire him? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, first off, there also need to be some statement in there. Even if it's just self-serving, like there were victims at Baylor, and we our thoughts are with them, and this is a really bad statement.
It's a very bad statement. And
if they're paying this Kimberly Dinert
if she got the $115,000, I would want the money back.
$115,000, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a bad statement. It looks like they're going to stick with them for now. Who knows? I mean, Art Briles' offense was big time like a decade ago.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. We don't know whether he's dated or not. I mean, he might be fine at an FCS level in terms of still being able to drop ball plays. He might be fine at a major college level. I don't know. I mean, but yeah, you are hiring damaged goods, dated goods, bringing on a level of criticism and scrutiny. You didn't have to. I mean, is Art Briles the only guy they could get out there that they thought could drop some good ball plays? And to your point, Dan, I would say yes. I mean, there's no reason to say that Art Briles should never be able to hold a job again, you know, that he needs to be damned to the fringes of society. But working on a college campus raises back all the issues of what happened the last time he was on a college campus. He may be able to coach just fine without there being problems. The question will be, who do you recruit, Art? You going to recruit some of the guys you recruited at Baylor, that type of guy? Or are you going to recruit different people? And how? What's the level of scrutiny and vetting going to be on people that you are recruiting to come in and do your offense? Because I think that was not just Art running a see no evil, hear no evil sort of ship, but also bringing in some problematic people when he was at Baylor. So, you know, there's multiple prongs to this, but, you know, he does certainly have the right to earn a living in the United States. There's nothing that says he can't do that. And guess I can understand Grambling being attracted to him. But again, I just wonder if you can't find somebody else to drop ball plays who doesn't bring that level of baggage to your campus.
Yeah, like I said, like I know a lot about that case, and I don't want to relitigate the Baylor case and all that went in, and it's complicated, and sexual assault cases are always complicated, and there should be zero. I mean, this is a zero tolerance thing. I mean, it's just there's nothing worse than the idea you'd send you would attend college and get assaulted by someone that they brought in that didn't deserve to be at that college, like, and the powers to be at the school would look the other way. I mean, it's just, the whole thing was terrible. It just wasn't all Art Briles' fault.
No,
I thought he was a convenient excuse. And then the narrative took over. And again, I'm not saying he's innocent, because I don't believe he was, but he wasn't as guilty as his name became. But, you know, that happens in America. It just happens. You know, one thing, it's like, well, he should be back coaching. Well, maybe he should just coach high school, or maybe he should just be coaching in the pros, or maybe he should go do something else. I don't know. It's not like you have an inalienable right to be a college football coach.
Right.
For Grambling, I mean, you know, the fact they made this case, and, you know, off the top of my head, I could make a better one, suggests Hugh Jackson didn't really think this thing through very well.
No.
I mean, I would sit there and be like, okay, I'm going to be on this guy's ass. He's having no oversight over anyone. I decide who gets recruited. I handle all discipline. I handle all oversight. We will go through everything. I think he's a good guy who deserves a second chance. And I think that because of what he went through, he is particularly aware of the challenges for our young men. And we are going to put in a comprehensive program on how to handle this stuff.
Right.
There you go. Not... whatever. What was the one? Redemption?
Yeah.
Forgiveness. Yeah. Like, right. I mean, like, if you go with that, you're like, all right, Hugh Jackson, he's a guy on the staff. He ain't in charge. He ain't making one decision. I'm making the decisions. But I think he can teach our guys a lot.
Right. Yeah. And I think if that had been spoken a little more clearly, or spoken at all, that might make the statement a little more palatable.
Hey, Hugh. Give me a call. $115,000. I could have written this. I'll only charge you $114,000 and no travel. I don't even need the travel.
I have said many times that colleges could very often use a sports writer or former sports writer to look at your statements, cut through the bull and say, no, say this instead, as opposed to this completely ridiculous garbage you want to put out there. We can help you with this.
One thing is, these coaches, and it's all the coaches, many coaches, they don't respect their sports information directors the way they should.
Right.
They look at it like, well, you kind of just run media operations, but they don't use a lot of really smart people are in sports information, media relations, and they don't use them as PR professionals.
Right.
And then they actually often hire out to these glamour guys that aren't actually very good.
Do you have Ari Fleischer in mind, perhaps?
Actually, I don't think schools hire Ari, do they?
No.
Aren't that dumb.
I'm just thinking of the glamour PR guy that discussed relatively recently.
That's true. But that was the playoff. That's the playoff. Ari Fleischer is one of the worst sports PR people I've ever come across. And I cover everything.
I wonder what the Grambling SID said when they tried to put this on Grambling.
He said, go call Kimberly up in Blue Ash, Ohio, and see if you email info@hughjackson.org. There's ways to solve the problem, and they don't do it, and they don't listen because the coaches are used to being in charge. And so you see it all the time in the post game press conference. There'll be some flare up in a game, and instead of handling it well, right, they won't. And I mean, this is like a totally unrelated. I'm just using it as an example, but like Juwan Howard after the dust up.
I was just going to bring that up.
Come in, be say this. A lot of it gets solved.
Yeah. Yeah, don't come in and just, you know, I mean, offer no apology whatsoever and just say, you know, I felt like physically at risk or whatever. It's like, just get the words, hey, I'm sorry about what happened.
This was bad. I'm going to do better. Yeah, you see it all the time. And so it's like, but there's a lot of talented people that they don't listen to. So
right.
Whether they hire a sports writer, I am available for cost if you can afford me.
We're going to open Wetzel 40 Consulting, how to get yourself out of a terrible PR situation without issuing a terrible statement.
Here's what we do. If Hugh Jackson had paid us $114,000, we'd be sitting here going, that Art Briles-Heil is just absolute genius. I believe in forgiveness, redemption, enlightenment also.
There you go. Enlightenment. Like Siddhartha going to Nirvana. I mean, what's
the Dalai Lama involved in this? We hired this old dude. He got in trouble. kind of a clown, but he had a good offense. We're hoping he scores us a couple points for Grambling. But don't mention it because he might.
That's right. We got to compete with Dion and the SWAC. We need to up our game here.
Yeah. Well, anyway, sorry, Hugh Jackson Foundation. I will not be donating to you.
No.
All right. That aside, the world will not end based on who's the OC at Grambling.
No.
All right. I thought this was an interesting story by Dennis Dodd of CBSSports.com, my old co-worker and our friend for a long time. College football attendance declines for the 7th consecutive season. It's the lowest average since 1981. This is, excluding last year, obviously, there's no numbers, right?
Right.
Because everything was. I mean, they're literally substandard. Michigan's attendance will never get worse. They had zero. Right? I mean, many schools had zero. So Ohio State, zero. That was that. But you look at it, it is down. It was down 1,629 per game since 2019. Average attendance was just 39,848. It's the lowest since 1981. I'm a little surprised, because that's a big drop, and I would have thought there was some pent-up demand to go to a game. But I guess there's still potentially people that had some COVID concerns, so maybe older fans that didn't feel comfortable going to games. That, you know, there could be still some leftover from that. Most of us felt comfortable going, but other people, if you have conditions or whatever, they made the choice not to go, so it's possible. But since 2008, the average attendance in 2008 was 46,971 per Dodd. So we're down 15,000 in 15%. I'm sorry, 15% in 13 years. You're seeing things like Tennessee's redoing their stadium to have more of like a club atmosphere in certain areas. Sully, are we going under 100,000?
That's the story. Yep, we're going under 100K, and they're adding like a party deck in the upper deck, and then some club seats, like you were saying, down below. So, yep,
right.
So, is it bothersome to the fan base from a pride and prestige standpoint, or does it really matter?
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of fans out there that are a little chapped that have a sense of pride when you look at the biggest stadiums out there and they're in the top five. But
right.
If you're really that concerned, you should have been going to the games, because they haven't been going over 100K very much recently either. So
a very good point. If you want to maintain a 100,000-seat stadium, fill the 100,000-seat stadium.
SEC, the average attendance was 72,195. Basically even from 19, down 0.07%. Is that like two people?
Mr. and Mrs. Jones, we need you back in the stadium at Donald R. Razorback Stadium in Fayetteville. Let's go.
They were gonna attend. They got a flat tire near
near Bentonville, yeah.
Couldn't make it. And SEC attendance dropped.
And they decided to go to the Shady Gators instead.
Big Ten was up 0.03%. to 665,000 to and Big 12, then Pac 12, lowest ever for the Pac 12, 43,865. That's got to be a lot of USC driven. ACC was down 11.7% to 42,000, lowest since 90. Independents were down. The big winner, Maction, baby.
Mm.
They're at 17,456 per game, plus 12.4%. Wow. I just figure Maction crowds are just made up, though.
Well, my one of my many questions with these numbers is, are these butts in seats or are these tickets sold?
Might not be the most accurate accounting.
Well, college attendance is like, election results in Chicago, okay? I mean, there's all kinds of accounting things that can go into it, irregularities, so to speak. I never have any real grasp who's counting how and then eventually it's up to somebody, usually the sports information director, to sign off on a figure. I have seen some creative figuring and how those things get arrived at the very end of, I think this is our biggest crowd ever in Rupp Arena. Let's say 24,328. The biggest is 324? Okay, yeah. That sort of
thing. Add a guy or two. Yeah. When I watch Maction, there's like 11 people in the stands on Tuesday night, and they're huddled around a garbage can with a fire coming out of it trying to warm up. There's correct. No way there's 17,456 when Ball State plays Bowling Green in the dark of a Tuesday night. Thanksgiving.
Oh, they're all on the other side of the stadium, Dan, where the camera can't see them.
Oh, is that?
Yeah, the other 17,000 are all over there.
Apparently, there's like a 235,000 seat stadium somewhere in the MAC that is waiting. Do they sell out the Indianapolis Motor Speedway like every week? And I didn't know about it.
They put a stealth game in IMS. That's actually where Ball State plays all their games. Yeah. So,
they just don't like to tell anybody. There's no freaking way they had 17,000. They haven't had 17,000 people come to like Kent State football. Cumulative in three seasons. Even the same guy counted over and over.
You know what? I think one of our listeners, I think, is a Bowling Green administrator. I think he's hit us up on Twitter a couple times. We need to hear from him. Let's hear how the accounting goes down and how many people they're really putting in the stands for Maction.
I'm extremely skeptical. Is this like the Dominion voting machines counted this thing? What are you? Stop the steal, baby! I don't know what. Maction, I love you, but come on now.
Suspicious spike if they're going up.
12%. Everyone else is down. Except for the only two increases were the Big Ten by 0.003 and the Sun Belt 0.04. And then Maction, 12.4. This is like the kid who's got a D average, but somehow cheats and gets 100, isn't smart enough to like miss a few questions so he doesn't raise suspicions.
It's the Derrick Rose ACT in Detroit.
Yeah, right. It's like Derrick Rose just got into Yale. What the hell? Way to go, Derrick. Anyway, this has nothing to do with this. Come on, Mac, cheat better.
Be more subtle. Come on.
17,000, my ass. All right. What the hell was the point of this story? All right. Apparently, you people aren't going to the games anymore. I say play us at the tailgate. This is why our ratings suck. You guys are, and no one's there. No, I don't know what's going on. So the question is, I don't okay. All right. The question is, can they reverse this? And what we are seeing, I believe, is a trend. And I'm going to start with the mighty Alabama Crimson Tide, a team that would presumably not need gimmicks, but you are seeing their future scheduling is home and homes. They're trying to make it more attractive to season ticket holders. I just don't think the fans, you can just trot out any old game anymore and they're going to show up. And that's probably where these decreases come. Are you selling out your stadium when you're playing your rival? Yes. Are you selling out your stadium when a top five team comes in your conference? Yes. But are you just, is there just that blind 60, 70, 80, 100,000 people that just show up to watch you play whomever? No, I don't. I think that's the issue. So, you know, under Nick Saban, Alabama took a course of playing neutral site early season games. And they've had many famous ones. And they would basically play in Atlanta or Dallas or what I think maybe Jacksonville or something once. But generally, they go back and forth. He'd want to play in a city he recruits. They get paid like $5 million to show up. They play somebody. They beat them. And that's how they start their season. Now we have home and homes. Next year, it starts with at Texas. Well, I guess they're not coming. But look at this home slate. Utah State, Louisiana Monroe, Austin Peay. That's the 2022 Alabama non-conference schedule. Like, yikes. Who wants to watch that? So they're at Texas. But then Texas returns on the 23rd in 23, and then it starts getting good later. Wisconsin, let's just get to this. 2025, they have Wisconsin coming, and they're playing at Florida State. 2026, Florida State shows up. 2027, West Virginia shows up. 28, it's Ohio State. Then it's Oklahoma State. Then it's Notre Dame. Then it's Georgia Tech. And all of these are home and homes. Arizona in 2032, Oklahoma in 2033. I guess that'll be a league game. Anyway, even Alabama, which presumably doesn't need this, is saying we got to at least have one good non-conference home game on our schedule. And that means we have to play two good games every year because we have to make this a home and home. Obviously, I find this to be a tremendously positive development.
Absolutely.
So I don't know how to discuss this because I'm still reeling from the Mac, but go ahead. Thoughts on Alabama, Pat?
Mac corruption. We'll delve into that in a later podcast. Like everybody else in the Midwest, Purdue, Ames, they all lie. Lots of liars in the Midwest. So here's a couple thoughts on this. First of all, like the trend is there, I think, over a long period of time. I don't think there's any denying that. I would wait probably to look at numbers again next year before I decide too much, because I do think in 2021, there is still a significant portion of the population that was a bit gun shy about going into stadiums, especially older people, especially probably in places where the fan base is maybe a little more fickle. Out west, hey, look, I was out there last week for Pac-12 swimming championships. You are masked all the time indoors. And that's in late February. Back last fall, I'm sure there were a lot of people that were like, nah, I don't think I want to go. So I would wait and see what the numbers look like in 22, provided we are continuing to put the pandemic behind us. That's a pretty big caveat. But secondly, I wonder if there are fans, Dan, who after sitting at home and watching in 2020 said, this isn't that bad. I kind of prefer this than going and dealing with the stadium brawl that it takes to get in and get out and pay for everything that you pay for. So I think that's another dynamic. Let's wait and see whether people rebound from just a personal habit if they liked not going more than they thought they might. As far as the scheduling, absolutely. Yes, bring it on. And that's colleges actually doing what I think they're maybe reversing course after seeing, okay, maybe we've pushed the consumer as far as we can push them. Because I've said before, they college football fans, God love them.
Such suckers.
Yes, complete suckers. We will give you garbage opponents. We will give you 11 a.m. kickoffs in Central Time Zone. We will give you 9 p.m. kickoffs in Eastern Time Zone. We'll give you Mercer on a 100-degree day in September. And we expect you to come. And I just looked at the Alabama attendance for this last year. And this is Alabama, like the most rock solid, passionate program going. They had three games that they didn't sell out, according to the numbers on CFBstats.com. They were 3,000 below capacity for New Mexico State, 5,000 below capacity for Mercer, and Arkansas, surprisingly, 2,000 below.
Rat poison, Pat. Are you saying that Mercer isn't a real team?
Yes.
Got tackling dummies over there.
Yeah, we the buying public know Mercer is a lousy team.
Don't tell Coach Saban.
Yeah,
and then he lectures the students to stay.
Oh yeah, right. And they've got like incentives down there too. If you stay for like, they can track, I think, your tickets or whatever. If you stay for the whole game, you get money off for this or that. I mean, they're doing
the third quarter. Like everyone's got a third quarter show now.
Yeah, right.
Right, the light show, the sing along, the firework,
Yeah, they're doing everything they can to keep people, not just to get them to show up, but then to keep them there past halftime. So there's a lot of things that people are trying to do, but the best thing you can do is to play good teams. So, you know, I welcome that trend, and I think it's a great idea. I've heard from other people in the SEC, one of the reasons they want to break up traditional divisions, other than just them being too unwieldy if you're going to go to 16 teams, is more diversity of playing teams. And we've talked about this before, where Georgia never plays Texas A&M, and Florida doesn't play Auburn, and that sort of thing. And instead of seeing South Carolina every single year, or every other year in your stadium, and Kentucky every other year, mix it up and bring in some other schools, and I think you reinvigorate the fan base to a degree. So I think we're going to see a lot of different trends towards getting better or at least more interesting opponents coming into stadiums.
I would think you'd get more too, like out of town fans, like the other team would be willing to take a trip, right? If you're playing, if you're a Georgia fan and you want to go visit South Carolina, you can go any other year for the last, you know, X number of years. And so you've probably done it, but you throw something new in there and maybe a crew says, hey, let's go to Arkansas, or Arkansas says, let's go to Georgia, whatever. And you kind of get, I agree with that. I do know the Big 12, one of the chief factors for Oklahoma and Texas was there were just, whether this should be true or not, it's just the opponents weren't exciting.
Right.
I mean, they could beat Texas, but nobody gets, you know, it's just not a big event. And you're in a city in Austin, increasingly a city. And to sit there and try to market when you got a home slate of Kansas States and Iowa States and Kansas, and, you know, and the big game you play is in Dallas. You know, you don't have that your big home game against Oklahoma. So you bring in some new opponents. It's fresh. It's going to be exciting. You're going to sell some tickets. Everyone's going to be fired up. There's new alums, that whole bit. And with, you know, if you're a Texas fan, like there's multiple places in the state of Texas, they might be playing closer than Austin. You know, with the way the league's set up. So I do think that will be a shakeup. Or these guys just need to call the MAC and find out what they're doing.
That's it.
Somehow. Tuesday night at 9 o'clock Tuesday will really night. Draw you a huge crowd.
Tuesday night at 9 on a 28-degree night. And
it's just flocking.
Mount Pleasant, baby. It's awesome.
Flocking to Mount Pleasant. Who doesn't want to drive?
That's going to be it. We're going to have to start putting correspondents in the stands to physically count people at Maction games.
I will say really this gonna... actually. So I do agree with you. I think a lot of people found different things to do. You know, a good TV setup, you know, you kind of basically couch gate or whatever they're calling it. Stay gate. I don't know. Do it at home, right?
Yep.
Grill it up. Have some people over to watch the game. It's pretty good. You got to do something to jazz up. I mean, the NFL stadiums are basically 65,000 seats, and they're plush, and it's a different kind of crowd, but they're set up differently, and they really try to be user friendly.
Yeah.
You know, you're walking through shopping malls here and stuff, like, you know, they got art on the wall and different things. It's a little bit of different, and a lot of pro sports, you go to, you know, NBA and NHL arenas, which are basically usually the same in every city, are incredibly plush. It's all about the suites and all that.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of places have figured out that, we're fine with 10,000 fewer fans if we're selling more club seats.
Right.
And make up the money there and make up the concessions and food and drink. And that's.
Yeah. And it's like you need the tailgate, you need the whole thing. I'll say this, the one, you know, I don't, last year, I went to the season opener, Michigan. I don't live that far from the University of Michigan. I'm not a Michigan fan, but I went, my daughter and I went to watch them play Western Michigan just because we wanted to watch a football game.
Right.
And met up with some friends and all of that. But it was not full. I mean, it was still 100,000 there, but it wasn't like totally jammed. I thought it was a good crowd. But again, I thought, geez, with the all the people that didn't get to go for a year. So I do think the pandemic hopefully is eased by next fall, but there were definitely people that didn't want to go. And then I just think there's people just didn't feel it. So anyway, that's our attendance story.
Again, we will be monitoring the machinations of the MAC.
All right, low college basketball, Saturday, baby. Top six teams all lost.
First time ever.
And Gonzaga played last, and I don't know why after the first five lost, I didn't just bet St. Mary's, like bet the house on them. Just seen that coming.
Yeah.
Gonzaga loses to St. Mary's. Arizona loses to Colorado. Auburn loses to Tennessee. Who are they? What's that, Sully?
I know.
No wonder this is leading the rundown.
That's right. You beat Bruce Pearl for the first time in six tries. It's leading the rundown.
Okay, I'm sorry. Purdue defeats Michigan. Michigan State defeats Purdue. Sorry. Baylor beats Kansas. Arkansas beats Kentucky. So now look, St. Mary's, Tennessee, Baylor, and Arkansas really not upsets. Michigan State is still Michigan State, and Colorado, that was a big upset. That's the biggest win I think the school ever had. They've never beaten anyone that high before. Texas Tech lost to unranked TCU. All right, so is this just one day where, like, the very goods beat? I mean, I'm not going to, you know, big Baylor at home upset over Kansas. It doesn't really seem like much to me. Or is this a sign that, like, it's just going to be wild? Take your pick. Anybody can win this thing.
Both, in my opinion. Alert readers of the 40 Minutes would know that I called that this weekend was coming, basically said that there were the top six teams were all playing very good teams on the road or playing in difficult places like Arizona, Colorado. Arizona has not beaten Colorado in Boulder since 2015. It's a hard place to play. Altitude, second game of a road trip in 3 days. You played in Utah. You turn around, you go play there. So all those games, you could basically say, yeah, they're none of them are that shocking. Now, Gonzaga getting completely housed by St. Mary's was a bit of an eye-opener. But I think also this is indicative of, yeah, what could be coming in March is the sport is pretty wide open at the top. Last year, from November on, everybody was pretty darn sure that Baylor and Gonzaga were the two best teams. They trucked everyone in the non-conference. They had great conference seasons. Gonzaga was undefeated. Baylor dropped a couple games, but that was coming off of COVID. So this year, if you look, every team had lost a game by mid-January. So there were nobody was sticking out as a super team. And now every team except Murray State, the mighty Murray State Racers, has lost at least two games. Only two teams made it through their conferences undefeated so far. They're both done, South Dakota State and Murray State. All the Power Five is lost. So I think we are looking for bracket purposes, since that's what we care about, you know, is that there's a dozen teams that I think could win. And I think there's a bunch of teams that could lose at any point second round on, and probably a couple first round shockers as well.
I agree, obviously. I think when your top four are Gonzaga, Arizona, Auburn, and Purdue, no offense to those teams, but like none of those, it's not they don't have good players, but because, you know, both Auburn and Gonzaga have potential number one picks, but it's not, these aren't your, you know, all right, Kentucky's got six guys, and Carolina's got, you know, five NBA players on the roster, and these are they all earn their spots. So I do think it's pretty wild where it's going to go. I watched more of the Gonzaga game; they were very unimpressive to me.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, boy, they've been super impressive all season, but they got their tails kicked in that game.
Yeah, everyone was all over them.
Yeah. This has a bit of a 2007 college football season feel to it, right?
Yeah.
Like it's just upsets, craziness. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? Hell, we had one of the best coaches get in a fight. And now the next week we have the top seven teams lose, you know, seven out of the top 10. So
yeah, it's been two entertaining weekends in a row.
Mm-hmm. It's rolling. We're rolling right into March.
Yeah. It's a wild time. I mean, how about, I saw this the other day, Oregon State basketball went to the Elite Eight last year and they're 3-24.
Yeah, lost at home by like 40 to UCLA on Saturday.
I mean, on Twitter that they won more games in March last year than they had all season.
What? Did everyone? What happened?
Now they still got some of the same guys, too. I mean, they've had some injuries. But, yeah, here's what happened. I mean, like, this is how, you know, that's one of the great things about this sport is, like, UCLA missed one or two key free throws in the Pac-12 quarterfinal last year, and Oregon State beats them and then never loses again. They win the Pac-12 tournament. Otherwise, they weren't coming anywhere near the NCAAs. And then they get in and win three games there and actually gave Houston a run in the regional final. I mean, you know, that's the nutty, like, razor's edge that sometimes takes over that sport.
I think it's going to be even more than ever.
No, I think it's possible.
That's one of the great slides ever.
Yeah.
They're 1-16 in the league.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're horrible. They are.
I am doing a horrible job hosting today. I am on tangents like Mac attendance in Oregon State. Play the hits.
Yeah. Way to appeal to the mass audience. We could talk, you know.
Let's, Let's talk Baylor and Kansas now. Oregon State sucks.
Let's delve into Oregon, the anatomy of Oregon State's collapse.
I love a good train wreck. I just don't know how do you win three games in the Pac-12
again.
Like, how are you a Pac-12 team and only win three games? You're allowed to buy like 10-11 wins. Look, I'm now all in on this. Sorry, everyone.
Don't apologize. I'm gonna come out and look into their schedule to find out how
they lost to Samford.
Yeah, they lost to Samford, lost to Tulsa, lost to Princeton.
UC Davis beat them. They actually played a hell of a schedule at Iowa State. Well, they were taking the bye games. Wake beat them, Penn State, Cal, Arizona. They lost to UC Davis. That's bad.
They have not won in 2022. Their last win was December 30th.
They beat Nichols, and then somehow they beat Utah.
Yeah, Utah's got to be hanging its head in shame. Of course, Utah's terrible, too. They're awful. We're 12-18, so, but still, I mean.
All right, well, it was a fun Saturday. It should be fun. The smaller tournaments begin 2 weeks to March Madness.
Yeah, they begin tonight, Monday night. We start getting, I think, the first game or two at least. And it's on. Fill out your Jeromes, everybody.
I was happy Providence won the Big East.
Yeah, first time ever.
Yeah, good times. I like that. All right, Pat, I don't know. You can only imagine what the poor Oregon State basketball fan is going through, because I'm going to tell you about this guy. He's a Texas A&M baseball fan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sully, these are your people.
These are Sully's people.
JT, at SportsBurner 414. I have absolutely no way of knowing this is true, but it's a tweet, so we're going to go with it.
We're going with it.
Right. This is like all those videos of like from the Ukraine that may or may not have been.
Yeah, right. That are actually from Syria in 2018 or whatever.
Yeah. You know, there was one where somebody basically started towing a tank or something. Yeah. I don't know whether any of these are true, but like this is if it's propaganda by the Ukrainians, they are the greatest propaganda machine I've ever seen.
Farmer, the guy with the John Deere, that video.
Yeah, he just started towing a Russian tank away. It was
and
like,
the guys are chasing after him.
Yeah, and then the Russian was chasing it. I was like, yeah, badass.
A Ukrainian Aggie.
These poor Ukrainians. It's the worst story ever, but man, they are just having horrible. A good time on the internet.
they're spinning.
Horrible. The more humiliation of Vladimir Putin, the better, as far as I'm concerned. So.
Always.
I'm going to believe every single one of them. All right. JT at SportsBurner Forfeit. This is why I don't believe this story might be. This is a little sketchy. I have suspicions. I think you'll be able to figure out where my suspicion begins. Texas A&M Twitter account at Aggie Baseball tweets out final Penn 8 A&M 5. JT responds, I just smashed my TV in front of 39 guests at my party because of the game. My wife just took our crying kids and said they're all spending the week at a hotel. This team has ruined my life and my party. I can't handle this anymore. Goodbye, Aggies. I am no longer a fan. And there's a little waving hand emoji.
No, that's completely bogus. I'm not buying that. Nobody has a 39-person watch party for a college baseball game in February. Start
I
there.
I mean, they're excited about Schlossnagel down there, but
who's Schlossnagel? Yeah.
Their new coach that they stole from TCU. Oh. That was a big coup.
Okay. Well,
39 people are watching the Penn A&M game at one party. Now it doesn't say it's a watch party. It could have been like his birthday party.
Okay, could be some other kind of party. But,
where I fall off, I make it all the way to the end, believing him. But the Aggies are it's a cult, right? So they're never going to leave.
Oh no, right?
So that's where I'm like, oh, this guy's not an Aggie.
No, they're just like, gig him harder. We'll be back. Fun.
Yeah, he's a horn.
Good
trying to drum it up.
Yeah, I don't believe that he smashed. If he did.
What was I, 13 years old, I actually stomped a hole in a wood floor after Florida walked off Tennessee in the College World Series. That's about as mad as I've ever been about baseball. Yep.
Where was this floor?
It was in my room. I had a wood floor. I was watching it in my room.
And the wood floor was so poorly constructed you could kick through it?
Well, it was a house built in like the 1920s. Wow. It was an old house.
Okay. Some serious Tennessee going on here.
It was. It was actually a log cabin house too.
Really?
Shockingly. Yeah. Well,
those things are sturdy.
Oh, it's sturdy, but the floor is old. I mean, I was a strong 13-year-old. I haven't grown much since.
Were termite issues there or anything?
I mean, I think so. Okay. Yeah. No, I hit my growth spurt and then stopped growing. I've been 5'9" since I've been 13. But
really?
The fact it was Florida and was a College World Series, regular season baseball game, you can't get worked up over.
What was under the floor? Is it a one story house, two story? Was it
two stories?
Okay. So you were like kicked into the living room?
No. It did go all the way through the roof, but I just snapped a couple boards.
Okay. Wow. I'm impressed, Sully.
Some Cobra Kai going on here. What?
Needless to say, my parents were not excited.
No, I bet
they
were.
How do you explain that? Busted the floor? I mean, that's expensive.
I know.
Yeah, that's the kind of one.
Better still than what my brother did as a freshman at Notre Dame when the Russians beat the Americans in the Olympic basketball game in 1972, the famous Rob job there with the clock. He kicked in the TV, but it wasn't his TV. He was in somebody else's room.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And that was in
1972. Those TVs cost like 40 grand.
Absolutely. Like, and nobody had them, you know?
That was a big old TV, too.
Yeah.
The big, you had to warm it up.
I'm sure. Old. And tune it in with the ears. Absolutely. No.
Wow.
Brother's patriotic fervor got the best of him.
All right. Additional news here. Turns out this is a internet poster named Galloping High Road. We're digging deep here. Another reputable source. There was a story in the New York Times, and I was like, "See, this is like a real story." Like, I don't know if any of these stories are real. We had been away for a few nights. This is and traveled back quite late. Towards the end of our journey, this is about 2 a.m. We were driving along a road in a rural area. Again, such details. When something crossed the road in front of us in full headlights for about 3 seconds. It was about the height of a person, maybe 6 feet or over, but it had short, powerful legs and hips. Might be Sully kicking in the floor, which seemed to move in a circular, fluid fashion. It was not a deer because it stood on two legs. This was in the Midlands, and the area is traditional rolling fields and woodlands. In this particular spot, there are no houses or buildings. Nearest is over a mile away. We drove back today, as it's only 7 miles from home, to look at the road layout, and whatever it was moved in a wide bowl-shaped field, dropping down to a stream.
Okay, so where is this? Where? What's the location,
Sully? Where is this?
Where are the Midlands?
I think this is in England.
England. Okay. Well,
England. Oh, that's right. I thought my question was: is this the Guntown Kangaroo?
Well,
could he have made it to England?
Didn't we locate? Oh no, he was in Denmark the last we heard. Right. He was in Denmark.
I don't believe
he's in Europe.
Yeah. He was in Denmark last week or whenever when we talked about the Danish kangaroo. Yeah. Anyhow, go on.
So Sully, I mean, Sully went away last weekend to like party or something. And I'm going to say the rundown is showing.
Yeah, I did. I actually had a few late nights playing poker with my grandma. So it was good. It was fun.
I'm sure she drank you under the table. Like she did. Shut up.
But so, all right. So we think the Guntown Kangaroo has migrated from Denmark to England.
No. It's still in Mississippi.
No. What about Fort Lauderdale? Guntown Kangaroo's been spotted in Fort Lauderdale.
That was spring break. all right, finally, and mercifully, finally, patrons at a social club in Britain. We're big on Britain. This is the actual United Press International. So take a little bit more truth to that. Social club patrons in Britain were treated to an unusual sight when a loose pig wandered into the establishment before being lured back outside with potato chips.
Okay.
Witnesses said the pig walked into the Easington Collier Club in County Durham just after 10 p.m. Said it was a club regular. Said the pig was friendly and approached them for affection. So they called the owner and said, "I'm sorry to disturb you, but there's a pig in the bar." They got some crisps from behind the bar, lured him outside with some cheese and onion.
Okay.
Thought they would have interesting. I think they should onion flavored chips.
That's how they used to kick me out of bars in college. They just put down like string cheeses.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
Right. I think they should have kept the pig in the bar. Mm-hmm. Could be the emotion.
Should be the mascot.
The next emotional support pig, since we had the one in New York or wherever it was.
Turns out they put up on the Facebook that the pig had come in, and the owner saw it on Facebook and came down to the bar to get the pig. Pig's name is Roddy.
Roddy.
Roddy, the drunken pig.
British.
I mean, pig was looking for a cocktail in this. They don't even give it those salty chips. Crisps.
If you're gonna give him some crisps, you gotta give him a pint to go with the crisps.
Yeah, give him a little pint of bitter and send him on his way.
Totally not fair. Roddy escapes while because her owner's not paying any attention to Roddy. He's sitting on Facebook all day. Escapes, tries to go have a good night, just a Tuesday night down the corner pub, and doesn't even get any drinks. So that's
unfortunate. Should be angry.
A BLT. All right, and finally, I forgot. We got to get to this. This is the one that was sent to us most.
Many alert listeners were on top of this one.
Our friend Hank the Tank.
Yes.
If you recall, the bear that had been breaking into homes, Lake Tahoe region, South Lake Tahoe, and basically had a bounty out on its head. This was profiling, Pat.
It was.
Hank the Tank, it turns out, is actually three bears. Not one, three bears.
He's a composite character.
Yeah. And they DNA tested the fur and found out that it was three different bears. And so now they're trying to round them all up, move to a sanctuary.
I wonder where Goldilocks is.
Three bears. What? Yep, we need her. This is unbelievable, though. Hank was framed. Hank the Tank was absolutely framed by the man.
I mean, he was guilty of some crimes.
Yeah.
It just they threw all of them on it, like the cops will do sometimes.
Yes, right.
Right? Yep. They just throw some cold cases on you. And it was not as big of a B&E threat as it deserved. There were many Hanks.
Like, if Hank has a good defense attorney, yeah, he can muddle it up. Now, I mean, he can sow enough doubt with the jury that I think Hank escapes.
You guys know the story of John Dornbez? Magician. He was the long snapper, NFL long snapper and magician.
It's an interesting career double there.
He's won like America's Got Talent. He's incredible. It's an incredible story. I've written about him. I've talked to this guy a few times.
Long snapping magician. Okay.
Yes. So he has this it's a terrible story. He grew up when he was young, his father murdered his mother. And so then he got put he went off to live with family. He was obviously extremely depressed. It's a very sad story. It gets better. He taught himself magic as a kind of a way to kind of process through it. He's like 12, but he also played football. He played for the Bills, the Titans, the Eagles for a long time. He was their long snapper, but he was also a really good magician. He won America's Got Talent. He goes around. He does unbelievable tricks. I mean, he's one of these world-class magicians that just blow your mind, right? They can do anything right in front of you, and you have no idea what happened. But this is why this is relevant. One of the ways, so he had no scholarship offers out of high school, but he took game film of he and two other players, okay? Merged it all together like a magician into one film.
Made himself a composite character.
Yes, and sent it out, and UTEP, I don't know why the minors aren't too good for a lot of years, bought it and brought him in as a linebacker and a fullback.
Oh, my gosh. And then he gets there and they figure he can't do anything but snap.
It becomes snap and then ends up becoming the long snapper for the team, gets his business degree, and then gets drafted and ends up playing in the NFL for 15 years, 14 years, something like that.
So it turns out the minors are actually pretty good at scouting.
Yeah.
But that was his thing. He goes, of course I got a scholarship offer. I was three guys in one.
The ultimate magic trick.
He magic tricked his way to a college scholarship, and then he turned out to be an NFL, probably the longest tenured UTEP football player in the NFL.
I was
going to
say, right?
He made like a couple Pro Bowls.
I would wear his jersey. I need a UTEP jersey.
I guarantee he's got like his picture up in the locker room, or in the facility.
He's making bank
minors
now.
In the NFL. Yeah.
He's huge. He won a Super Bowl, I think, with the Eagles. Played 162 consecutive games. He's a really interesting guy. There's a tremendous, well, you can try to find my stories on it, which are not probably that good, but I did write about him a few times. He's a very fascinating guy, but there's a great HBO Real Sports segment on him. It's J-O-N-D-O-R-E-N-B-O-S. It's one of the best stories I've ever heard. Super sad, but then he's just like, oh, you know, this is what I did. But yeah, he's done the magic tricks for me, and it's like, it's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes a card disappear, and then it's like behind you. When they're that good.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Just not possible.
Good magicians are really good. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you can do stuff that completely befuddle everybody, even though you're getting scammed, I respect them.
Hank the Tank. That's why I don't know.
Clear our man, Hank.
Hank was 3-1.
Clear his name. Do not send him to death row. Everybody stop shooting at him.
One third of the breaking and enterings.
Yeah.
And his two accomplices. It was a ring.
That's it. He's got a crime family right there in Tahoe.
We just throw it all on Hank. He takes the fall. All right. That's the podcast. We'll be back Thursday.
We'll do better on Thursday.
Yeah. I just thought it was fairly entertaining. Max season ticket holders, let us know what you think. Let's hear from you. Did you see 17,000 other people there?
We don't believe you, Mac.
I need photos. All right. Please continue to share and subscribe. We will talk to you later.